Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Robbie freaking Earl. Hi. And welcome to all of our listeners, to Friends from Work. We're excited to have you here. How are you, Robbie?
I am great. I sound a little bit like I've got whatever always happens in October. But I think it's just dust. Like all of Austin is just dusty right now. Okay. Lovely. And in fairness, I'm trying to think when you were like this. Maybe it was when we were in San Diego, when you had just been at Kirk's. But I feel like you were really hoarse just from like...
some talking.
Like just from talking. Yeah, just being around a lot of people and it being loud.
That's me my whole life, basically.
So when we moved to Austin in 2017, we went... like our first time going to ACL, like the Austin City Limits Music Festival in the middle of town was... to go see The Killers headline.
Oh, heck yeah.
And because I love The Killers.
Still haven't seen them. Bucket list.
Oh, man. So that was my first time seeing them. And then I saw them one time since then in a totally different, like a more of like an arena setting. And then now for the first time since 2017, they came back to ACL to headline again, and Candace, who is now like 2 weeks from her due date, did not have any interest in going, but I wound up having the opportunity to just go on the last afternoon of the festival to basically just see a couple of artists and then see The Killers.
Really?
And man, it's just, they're so good. Brandon Flowers is like the last great American frontman. He's like a rock star. It's so fun to, like, you would love seeing them live because there's just so much, like, he puts so much into it.
That's so cool. They did like a residency in Vegas last year, I think. Mm-hmm. I was in Vegas for golf for 2 weeks in a row and I just missed it. I almost extended, or I can't remember if it was getting there early or extending the trip, but I didn't get to do it. It was like I was there in October and they were just wrapping up in September or something. So I still haven't seen it.
I had friends that went to that and I was so bummed because, yeah, they just played Hot Fuss all the way through for that residency. But this was,
it had been
was
like 20 because, years or something, I think. 2004. Yeah. That sounds right to me.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
But they did totally different sets the first weekend of ACL and this weekend, which was fun. So the, like the people that, because sometimes people just do the exact same thing.
You can go to both.
Yeah. But yeah, they actually opened with Mr. Brightside, which is wild. It's like, yeah, it was. So I'm going to those things always reminds me, like when I was doing music in Nashville and I first found out that there were like certain things you could write off on your taxes as like inspiration, you know, like going to, if you went to see
your
another
phone,
concert,
your phone
or
bill. And then, right, yeah, Spotify. Like Apple Music. Yeah, exactly. And then going to a concert. Yeah.
And I used to be like, oh, that's like kind of a, like, that's a hack, you know, as just a way to, you know, cause we don't make much money. So this makes it easier. But every time I go to really great
you're
shows
actually feeling
like
inspired.
That, it works. It does. I come up with just generally like, there's a little bit of like, oh man, like that makes me want to go sit at the piano. But there's also just a little bit of like, there's a renewed, you know, zest for life.
I think that's one of the legitimate challenges of a creative job like you had with music and like I have. What people don't understand, I think, is that if you're creating, you do have to be in some kind of headspace. Like today with me bringing my guests this weekend back to the airport at 5:10, I just feel so tired. And it's really hard to get into the mood to make creative decisions, like feel like you're bringing your best self. So today I literally texted one of my friends and clients saying, today was just one of those days where I hated everything I did. Like, I don't know that I accomplished anything. By the end of the day, I was like, I don't know that any of this works. And then the inverse sometimes happens where you're just so inspired. You get into a mode and your phone's on do not disturb. And for some reason, everything you're doing works. And then you go home and listen. And you're like, oh, that all works. That was all cool.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you're discovering the song instead of fighting against it. So I get you. Like you do have to be in a certain mindset. It's not like an assembly line, you know?
It's like I think it's such an interesting marriage of like discipline and inspiration when it comes to stuff like that, because you can't, I feel like when you're younger as a musician or as a creator, it is just sort of like, you don't have that many obligations. You're not that busy. So you can kind of just follow the muse, you know,
and
then at some point you have to learn. Yeah. It's like, you have to treat it somewhat like a job that you're clocking in and out of just to kind of get the reps and build the skills. But it is wild how some days, like, I mean, Candace's job where she's just, you know, coming up with like logos and set designs and these entire ideas for like the whole marketing strategy behind something. It's like she's coming up with all these like unique ideas every day. And it is just like, it sucks because if you're just drained, like you can't really, like you can't, like if I'm drained, I'm not writing. Like it's hard for me to come up with like great arguments, like when I'm like drafting a brief or something. But you can at least kind of just like chug away on an email or whatever and then just be like, well, that was not as productive of a day. But when when you're having to like show up and come up with something that people are going to be like, wow, cool. And you're just not feeling it.
I actually think that's a great transition to today's episode, because I would imagine it's fairly similar in the screenwriting world too. That you need to often find inspiration from something else, or I would imagine.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things about making a record that are similar to making a film. The film is just times 100, you know, but.
I think that's true. I mean, for Marvel in general, I think like as we're transitioning in, as we've talked so much about the pace of things, what they've been emphasizing, what they've been de-emphasizing, I do think there's that element of like, is it just easier to make things that you're excited about when, you know, like when the expectations are lower and like you're not having to think through all of the different levels of like the various critiques and like I do, like there are these things that get added on and complicate it that were not as much an issue earlier in the MCU, which is one of the things that I really love about what it seems like they're doing with Wonder Man. Specifically, but also like we got a whole slate of stuff to discuss here.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start with Wonder Man. That was, I think, the headliner out of New York Comic Con, which is where a lot of the news we're going to be talking about today originated from. And Greg, as always, did a great job of recapping all of this news in our newsletter, which you can subscribe to by going to our website or checking out Discord or whatever, and you can find the newsletter and subscribe there. And so I'm going to kind of go through it, But I do want to start with Wonder Man because I have no idea what I just watched. I legitimately don't get it a little bit. And I love that. It makes me feel a lot like I did with WandaVision the first time, where you see those trailers of like the 50s and I'm like, I don't even get what's happening. So I'm going to be super naive here with some of the comments and discussion because I have no idea. So am I to gather that inside the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there is superhero fatigue amongst the people living there? From real superheroes and like old movies inside the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so this legendary director is coming back and remaking an old show into a new movie about superheroes. And then is the guy who's actually going to be cast for it going to become a legitimate superhero? Like somehow he gets superpowers as well. So it's a superhero inside a superhero show inside a superhero universe. Is that correct?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I don't know. Like it does feel. It feels to me almost like a mix of WandaVision and She-Hulk, and kind of the way that they are making it both tonally, but also like it reminds me of She-Hulk in that it has that kind of meta commentary. I don't know, like, I don't think that there is an MCU within the 616, but maybe
like a literal cinematic universe in there. Like, right, they're not right. making like, these movies based on real stories. You could argue that, right? Maybe there are.
No, you totally could.
Maybe they are making movies on like Spider-Man Homecoming. Once you hear that story, because we have wondered before how people in the MCU learn about some of this stuff, right? Haven't right. we?
Well, and you remember like in Logan, there's that bit where they're like making X-Men comics, you know, like
in, oh, right. Yes, that's a
in
call
that
out.
Film universe. And they've played with that in the comics too, where Al Ewing actually did something not too long ago in his Thor comic where he actually has a like a villain buy the rights to Thor's comic book, and it creates this whole kind of meta thing where it's like this guy gets to decide like what Thor says and does and stands for, and it creates all these issues. But like, you know, that's that kind of like you see him hold up the issue that is the actual first Journey into Mystery Thor issue that Stanley and Jack Kirby wrote. So you kind of have these precedents for the comics exist within this universe, and they're understood to be like comic book retellings of events that the characters perceive as real. I feel like that would be like a lot for them to.
Yeah. Especially in a show.
Yeah. I mean, but it is.
I hope it's a meta thing that they're making a show within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but secretly I hope that's where it stops. I hope it's not what I just said a second ago. I hope it's not that they also actually do have a cinematic universe and people that live in there are watching movies of these, because I don't want it to a little bit detract from the true trauma that someone that lives in New York, for example, would feel from these things. And I feel like making a movie about like the Battle of New York to someone who's actually in the Battle of New York is probably, you know what I mean? Like you wouldn't make a superhero movie or a fictional movie about 9/11.
Although I guess they made the Broadway play. So with like the Rogers musical.
Either way, I love the premise. I kind of personally don't want it to go too far.
No, I'm with you. And I think that would be too much of a distraction. Like I'm sure that it will have to come up to some degree, because if they're talking about superhero fatigue in a universe where superheroes actually exist, that's just got to be a different conversation. And we know that it is that universe because Trevor Slattery's
of
there.
Legitimate superheroes?
Yeah.
Not like, of the movies about superheroes?
I mean, maybe they are. Like, maybe they're making movies about superheroes, but not about the real ones. You know, like maybe it's like...
Okay, that's perfect. Let me ask you, is Wonder Man a real hero from the comics, or is this all made up for this universe?
He is a real hero from the comics. And he is like a... In the comics, he is a... like a Hollywood actor that...
But he's not playing a superhero in Hollywood, right? In the comics. He's just a generic actor that also has superpowers and becomes Wonder Man? Or you're saying he acts as Wonder Man?
No, I think it's the first one. Now, it gets kind of complicated because he's actually been around as a character for a long time. I think it was like another Stan Lee creation from the early 60s. And he's had kind of various incarnations. Actually, and I'm not sure if they're going to do anything with this or not, but Wonder Man is supposed to be tied to like sort of the role that like or roles that Tony and Bruce play in the creation of Ultron in the MCU. Those roles are filled by Hank Pym and Simon Williams. In the comics, Simon is not a scientist, but Vision's like, I think it's supposed to be his brain patterns are like modeled after Simon Williams. So at one point, I think maybe like Wanda and Simon date as kind of a like, after she and like, I think maybe it's after Vision dies, one of the times that Vision dies. So there are like all these different like things that he's kind of been used for and been connected to. But I think that he's one of those characters that they could do any number of things. I do think that it's understood that he's kind of like the, at times been the Hollywood superhero. So it makes sense. But the version that I'm seeing in the trailer does not seem like the original, like what I associate with that character originally, like the fact that he's just like an actor that's trying to get work playing Wonder Man.
Well, for me, I'm intrigued. The trailer didn't blow my mind. It wasn't like I'm immediately like, oh my gosh, this is Emmy Award winning. I can't wait to see it. But I'll say the same thing I said for She-Hulk, for Ironheart, for WandaVision, all shows that I ended up loving. I'll say the same thing, which is I would always rather them err on the side of being extra creative and different than just making another superhero show. And so I am a total open book that this could be awesome. And I'll obviously leave it open for the possibility that it's a flop, but I'm always on the side of taking a big swing. So we'll see.
Yeah, agreed. And I do just think my prediction is that you're right. Like even the fact that it's called Wonder Man, like that's a character, like that it's a remake of an old movie. So I have to think it's just like an existing IP that people in the MCU are familiar, like maybe it's like they're familiar with that in the same way we're familiar with Superman or something, setting aside the Eternals reference.
right. Okay, so the other news on that though is that it actually is coming out in January, not December. So I think it's,
yes.
I gotta find this on the newsletter. I think it's January 27. Yes, 27. At 9 p.m. Eastern, eight episodes of 30 minutes. So again, more in that Wanda Vision vein, a little more sitcom-ish in its length and overall amount of episodes. So that'll be January. If there are truly 8 weeks of that, let's assume maybe there's 6 weeks of that, maybe a double premiere and a double finale or something like that. If it's 6 weeks, that's going to almost run directly into the next thing, which is Daredevil Born Again season 2. And that hype train has really left the train station here. Charlie Cox was at New York Comic Con talking all about it. They showed a trailer that is kind of leaked, actually leaked by Jessica Jones herself on accident, I guess. So you can find that, but it's a really crappy video. And so I didn't watch it. I'm waiting till the actual thing. But with her, Jessica Jones, I think Kristen Ritter is her name, also mm-hmm. being a huge part of this show, apparently, we're getting dangerously close to needing me to go watch that show, the original show, Jessica True. Jones. So that'll probably happen at some point too. But yeah, I guess the point is it comes out in March and I hear nothing but good things. And he's wearing the original classic.
He's got the D's.
Double D suit. Yeah.
Double D's.
Double D's.
Yeah, I'll stand by season one of Jessica Jones's. Really, really good, super dark, but I feel like that should be enough. I don't think that they're going to expect people to be familiar with season two of that show. I'm going to bank on that.
In the current landscape of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the craziness of your life, how excited are you for Daredevil season two on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm pausing because I'm very excited about it. I think it feels a little too far away right now, even though I know it's not. Like, it is coming quick, but like, I think that I've been thinking Wonder Man was this thing that was right around the corner, and now it's kind of been pushed back. But everything I'm hearing about Daredevil makes me excited, both qualitatively, what we've talked about with the creative teams being in place now. But the biggest thing for me is I really like the same way we've kind of talked about Spider-Man. Like, I really like where that character is now starting, and that it feels like a unique place to launch from, where we're going to get some different kinds of stories. And that's kind of how I feel about where we are with Daredevil currently. Like, I like that we didn't end season one with Fisk going down again and getting sent to jail. I like that we don't have like a bunch of like mystical ninjas running around and like that's going to be the war. Like, it really does seem like they're doing the, like, queuing up the Chip Zdarsky Devil's Reign.
It's setting up the right stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just like, we've never seen anything like that. And add that to the stuff that I'm seeing about there being maybe more of a tie between that and Brand New Day than, yep. you know, I had dared to hope for, which I know could still mean very little, but at least they're talking about it that way.
Yeah, here's the quote from Brad Winterbaum. "We are communicating a lot with the team on Spider-Man Brand New Day to make sure that there's coherence there. We don't want to spoil anything, but it very much exists in the same world and it's important. We're in a shared universe together, but I would say just the Daredevil comic books, the Punisher comic books, depicted a certain tone and the idea of New York in a different way than Spider-Man's, but they both exist in the same universe. It's similar. Everything lines up and the impacts are felt, but we're able to tell different stories." Which, all good. Music to my ears, really, yeah. Honestly. We've been wanting for them to kind of line that up for a while. Winterbaum also revealed that Matthew Lillard will be playing a New York power broker named Mr. Charles. So that will be next March. Then, obviously, during the summer, we have... I'm not missing something with the animation, right? In chronological order. But we obviously have Spider-Man Brand New Day in yeah. July. I'm just going to use this newsletter as the template here. So I'm going to keep going down. Yeah. After that, which we talked about, by the way, if you want to hear more about Spider-Man Brand New Day, we have episodes talking about that last week, I think. Marvel finally confirmed Vision Quest. Paul Bettany showed up at New York Comic Con, which I'm not going to lie, I texted you. There was a little bit of me that's like, I think I chose the wrong Comic Con with all these people being here and stuff. But
yeah,
you reassured me it maybe won't be that way forever.
Yeah, no, I think this was the aberration. But it is fun to see all those folks pop up. Oh,
for sure. It's just fun to hear them talking about it again too, you know. Yeah. Paul Bettany specifically said White Vision got all of the colored Vision's memories, but he's still wrestling with the emotions of that and if like who, what that means he is. So we'll see from there. But the other thing is that the show stars James Spader as Ultron. And apparently there's a rumor that it might be a real human Ultron, that James Spader will actually be looking like James Spader at some point. So I don't know how that's going to work, but yeah.
Interesting. Man, that's the best news about that show that I've heard, just because we both love that character and the way that he, like, every, like, I hope that they just give us more time and that it is kind of true to the way that Whedon wrote the character, because I thought that that was like in the same way that I thought he really got Loki and elevated Loki. I think that there was the opportunity to do a version of that with Ultron that just didn't make sense with where the MCU was heading at the moment. But if they can kind of double back to that and recapture it, I mean, he is, like, we've talked about this when we've talked about, like, main, like, quote unquote Avengers level threats. I do think, like, Ultron is, he's viewed as one of the major Avengers villains, and, you know, which is why he got billing in the second film. But I kind of would love for them to bring him back and maybe not.
Is there a way to do that? Is there a way to do that?
Like,
I guess they're about to do that.
I mean, I hope that they keep him. You know, like, if they want to continue doing Avengers movies, like, this is the character that, like, it's, there's something about, like, the tricky thing about Ultron is, on the one hand, like, we saw some of in Age of Ultron, he can always escape through, like, the internet and go wherever, and What If also kind of did a good job of showing that in season one.
Right.
And which is what makes him so threatening. It's also what makes it really tricky, because if you do leave him around at all, it feels like something where, like, how are you ever gonna, like, how do you defeat this person?
Or how do you explain why he's just taking an off, you know, year?
Yeah, exactly.
if you're dealing with something else, why is he so, just, like, deciding, I think now that he'll, it's, wait?
But I don't know. I think it would be a smart thing to do, especially if, like there are times in the comics where Ultron goes, like, off planet and, like, takes over entire other planets.
Okay.
And just makes that, like, his domain. Like, there are ways to kind of get him maybe off the board temporarily without necessarily resolving that entirely. But at the same time, I just think it's, like, there are certain characters like that where if we could, like, get them back in the toy box, that sounds,
I agree,
like a win.
I agree. I think the only other interesting thing is that Brad talked about Vision Quest specifically as a like a finishing part of the trilogy that was started with WandaVision and Agatha All Along, which we've talked about during those shows, but I guess officially being confirmed or talked about in that way, that this is the conclusion to that trilogy. So that'll be interesting too. So I did miss X-Men 97 is going to, I think it's supposed to be this summer. So I think it would go
nice.
Wonder Man, Daredevil, maybe X-Men 97, then Spider-Man, then Vision Quest. And then after that, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, which is, I think they actually showed some stuff from that as a season two, and then Doomsday at the very end of the year. So next year is going to end up being, with especially with Wonder Man moving to January, a massive year as far as content goes. Two animated shows, two live action shows, two movies. Three live action shows. Three live action shows, two movies.
Yeah, true. And two huge movies.
Yeah, two of their biggest. The only other news to come out of the weekend is just that Hollywood Insider Jeff Snyder, I think his name is reporting that new X-Men movie that Jake Schreier is directing is going to fill the May 5, 2028 release date. So the rumor, I guess, or confirmed, is that there was supposed to be a 2027 summer movie, and that got pulled out of there. So I still don't know. I mean, I know I know that they've said that's how it's going to go. I still would kind of be surprised if the only movie in that whole year is Secret Wars, but maybe there's some shows. I don't know. Maybe that's it. But the one movie a year thing, I was under the impression that Bob Iger didn't love. Anyways, it's probably, I don't know if it's too late to change it or whatever, but the following year, X-Men will be the first movie after Secret Wars, which, as we've said before, is probably the right call. If you're going to launch it, wait till that whole thing is done, then launch it from there.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I would like to see a Fantastic Four sequel, whatever that looks like, around that time too. Like, I was saying before, I don't like having too much, like, more time than is necessary between those. Like, it was like there was a time where we were getting full trilogies in like 6-7 year spans. So that would be kind of like if we come out and we've got those properties and ostensibly another Spider-Man movie, like that's going to be that puts Marvel in the place that like they've been kind of trying to get back to, like some like core franchises again, even if the Avengers does go dormant again.
The thing I said to Greg in our news episode, it's too bad that 2027 date got pulled off the calendar, because that to me feels like on paper the best Fantastic Four sequel spot they could start right now filming. Because think about that. You get whatever happens in Doomsday happens, and they're a huge part of that. But if Doomsday doesn't end with a merged timeline yet, because that's going to be Secret Wars, then you could do one more story from Fantastic Four's universe in the retro future vibe. And, you know, I mean, if Doomsday doesn't mess that up too much, and maybe they're dealing with a Doomsday Fallout thing, whatever that would be, maybe Dr. Doom's in that movie or something. And then if Secret Wars is ultimately going to end with a new timeline being branched where they don't have that aesthetic, that's your chance to do it, right? Otherwise, if theoretically they're pulled out of that into a merged timeline, then I guess we're saying goodbye to that aesthetic. Because I'm assuming we don't think the merge timeline is going to be retro-futuristic. It's going to be more just normal, I think, personally.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, especially maybe with like the X-Men coming out and stuff, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, this is where I would say I think doing something, like at this point, just looking at the state of the MCU, I kind of think that there's still more to be gained by like closing out what exists currently and turning and letting those things kind of feel newer. And maybe that, like, if there were a merge timeline, whatever that looks like in the MCU version, like, I think that it would feel a lot fresher to people if you did change the aesthetic, whether it is like the Fantastic Four retrofuturism or whether they just kind of like, we, you know, like we've talked about, you bring over the people you need to bring over and you move forward. I just think that there's more to be gained that way than the other way, but I think the other way is more likely.
Yeah, I hate to break it to you. That's what they're going to do. Because like with starting Brand New Day trilogy, I don't think they would have one movie be in like 616 gritty with the Punisher, and then the next movie he's in a retro futuristic thing because of Secret Wars. Like I have a feeling they're planning their own trilogy of sorts, like things like that. I love the aesthetic. I guess what I'm saying is, as a fan, I don't know that it can be the only aesthetic. So that's what I'm saying. Sneak another movie in there so we get more of it for people like you who love it. But I understand what you're saying. Like, it's basically a rebrand. Like, look how different this is now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm guessing they're going to find a different way to say, look how different this is, than just we're in that kind of universe. If nothing else, maybe also just because practically they probably don't want to have to build that vibe for every film coming out.
and
locations and stuff, you know?
And that's one of the reasons I'm so grateful for Fantastic Four feeling the way it does, like in how much it felt like a standalone movie. Because I think like there it is. Like there's your like...
Right.
Quintessential Fantastic Four. Like we talked about how much I thought that they kind of nailed the comic accuracy. So I am okay with them departing more now. And obviously there have been a lot of Fantastic Four comics that didn't come out in the 60s. So there's room for them to like let that evolve.
But you wouldn't hate one more. And you wouldn't hate one more if like somehow Doomsday starts an incursion. And so you get this retro futuristic Fantastic Four, but then somehow like Spider-Man's pulled in there for one movie or something. He's like, I'm not supposed to be here or something. You know, you would love something like that, I feel like. And then they're like, what the heck is happening? And then that leads into Secret Wars. And then we don't have that aesthetic anymore after that or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just a little weird with Spider-Man because I think you're right. Like they just kind of did that with him in a way because of the way No Way Home ends.
Yeah.
But it's weird because I would say, oh yeah, you wouldn't want to do that because Peter has these, like we like Tom Holland's Spider-Man. We like the history of his Spider-Man. But at the same time, like no one remembers who he is now. So I think one of the strange things for them moving forward is going to be showing us that he is actually invested in like Aunt May is not even in New York anymore. Tony's not there. And at least as of now, our understanding is that MJ and Ned are in Boston. So there is the weird, like
you could do it if you were going to do it right now.
Yeah. Like, would it even really change any, like it would change things obviously if he's like, whoa, I'm in the 60s now. But like, in terms of his like connections and relationships, he would almost be in the exact same situation he's already in.
You're saying post Brand New Day though? That's the only thing I'm saying. Cause whatever that, they no, set up in Brand New Day, like, yeah,
they'll we know do that's all coming that
in less than a year, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, which is good. And they're probably going to see that as an opportunity to address that stuff. And maybe that's when we get a new, like new supporting cast members. And after all that, we're going to think like, yeah, we wouldn't want to rip him out of this and put him into a new pocket universe thing. But
yeah.
Yeah. I
hear you. Not to let you down, you know?
No, I know. But I think you're right. That would be a nice slot for it. I'm also just like, I remain so curious to see whether Dr. Doom outlast Secret Wars.
Right. And if he does, is it RDJ's Dr. Doom? Is he going to do it till he's 80 or 90, according to Deadpool? You know, kind of thing. Yeah. Right. He really could if they wanted to. As far as they did the Thanos over an entire saga thing, but really they introduced Thanos about halfway through the saga, and then he made it through the two final movies. It depends to me how much they want to break up that pattern. Greg and I talked about that last week too. Like we again don't know how much is Doomsday Infinity War and Secret Wars Endgame in its vibe and stopping points and all of that stuff and whatever. But if they are intentionally wanting to do something different because it's the same directors and the same writer and stuff, like if they're trying to do something different because of that,
mm-hmm.
Then one way you could change that is have Dr. Doom around, that he's not the sole bad guy of sorts that's meant to be stopped. And even when he is, like, it's a little more like Loki maybe or something. He's mischievous, but he's not awful all the time and can make appearances here and there. It's back to our original premise, essentially, of remember when we started the podcast and we talked about Marvel has a hard time with deaths? I think it's kind of both ways. It's like they have a hard time with deaths, and sometimes, like in the case of Ultron, that was like a death we maybe don't want, and we want the villains to be able to go longer and cover more ground and pop in and out, and how do you write that to explain it, and you know.
It is hard.
It's interesting. Yeah.
But
it's hard either way. It's kind of hard either way.
In comic book movies especially, but I do think there's an opening there with Doom because just the way he's been used in the comics, you know, like Thanos, the Infinity Gauntlet story really elevated Thanos into like a universal threat. So it's always this kind of thing where like when he shows up in the comics, even before like this started happening in the MCU, it was always like, oh, like if you are on Thanos's radar, something terrible is about to happen to you. Because he's like unstoppable. Whereas like with Dr. Doom is like the ultimate villain on Earth, but he also gets beaten by the Fantastic Four over and over and over again, because that's right. how like comic book villains normally work. Like he is both like a threat and he's a really cool character, but he's a character that is not like infallible. Like there's something really nice about having Doom just over there in Latveria. Because every now and then it's like Wakanda. It's like another set piece you can kind of play with. And it's like, oh no, like now we have to go to Latveria and talk to Dr. Doom because somehow he wound up with this special weapon or someone's over there or whatever. And I think that that's a setup that you can sustain with that character that you can't with someone like Thanos, because at some point you're just like,
it's got to come to a head.
Especially with the Infinity Gauntlet. But yeah, but even without it, it's like he can't be this, like have these massive, like earth shattering armies just that he can like roll out whenever. So
but you're right. I'm glad you said the Infinity Stones, because it's almost more, what you're saying almost applies more to the Infinity Stones. Like at some point, the Infinity Stones had to come to a head, even more than Thanos, theoretically, right? Because even if he's super strong, you could argue that he's just like taking his time, taking out different worlds, and eventually it's coming, but he's kind of doing that, you know. But him getting the stones, I mean, there's no way to go back at that point. But I agree with you, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but even if you take, like, even if you take the stones and say that Thanos gets to stay on, it's like he is so much stronger than any one person that we've encountered, with the exception of like maybe Captain Marvel, to where it's just like they set him up that way. Whereas I think Dr. Doom, kind of like what we've talked about with Iron Man and a little bit of what we talked about with Kang way back when we were talking about kind of what separated Kang from Thanos, like it's not that he is just like a sheer powerhouse. It's more that he always kind of has these like evil plans and is a genius and can like invent all this crazy stuff, but is also kind of a sorcerer. Like he's just this, he's kind of like whatever you need him to be for the story. And you like, that's the fun of Dr. Doom. So I think it's like, I mean, even in the comics, like you have Dr. Doom show up as kind of the villain of the original Secret Wars ultimately, but that didn't result in Dr. Doom kind of going away or being like defeated in the same way it did with like Thanos, where it's like he kind of gets to stay and become like a staple.
Right.
So I don't know. We'll see.
That's a great way to end it. We'll see. Let us know your thoughts on all of this news out of New York Comic Con. How is everyone doing? Stay in touch with us. We'd love to chat with you on Discord. You can message us on Instagram. You can message us on our website. And then I guess lastly, Robbie, I would say hopefully everything goes smoothly for you and Candace if this is the last time you and I talk on a recording before you are a dad. So we will we'll get an update on that hopefully sometime soon. Hopefully that all goes well.
We're ready. Bags packed, routes mapped.
Crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
You're at the point now where I'm sure Candace is like so ready for it to be over. Yeah. Yeah. My wife was just like, by like month nine, was like, this is dumb. Like, can we be done, please?
I'm just grateful that it's now and not like 3 months ago in terms of the weather. Like, it's still fairly hot here, but it's at least like cooled off at night. Mm. And I think if Candace were this pregnant in like July, then we would have had to just like move.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We're having incredible weather over here. You would love it. You'd be jealous.
I would be.
Yeah, but in the meantime, by the way, Robbie and I recorded some incredible episodes that are still yet to come for this, the main feed, and Friends from Work Plus, and including a special episode from one of our listeners this week. So if you're interested in checking out Friends from Work Plus, you can do a free trial on Apple or on Patreon and consider signing up to support this podcast and the new baby. For Robbie, thanks for listening. thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon, right back here on Friends from Work.
Wayfair's big sale is returning. Get ready for Way Day. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. From October 26th through 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So mark your calendar and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.